With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to episode 50 of Weighing In with Andy Hamilton and David Mirkatani. I'm Andy Hamilton of Track Wrestling, joined on the phone from St. Louis by David Mirkatani. I'm back in the United States for the first time in 25 days, after 25 days over in France and Greece for the World Championships and Cadet World Championships. Back in Cedar Falls. David, how's everything down in St. Louis?
Everything's good. Welcome back to the States.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's
a lot of fun being over there. Saw a lot of great wrestling, but it's good to be home.
Yeah, I'm sure your pups and a lot of other people missed you. So it's I'm sure it's nice to just do laundry and sleep in your own bed and all those sort of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have a ton of wrestling to catch up on.
That's right.
Lots of good stuff from the Cadet World Championships. 5 golds from the United States, Colton Schultz in Greco, 4 in men's freestyle, Will Lawan, Kurt McHenry, Aaron Brooks, and Daniel Kirkbleet. David, what impressed you about what you saw from the Cadet World Championships?
I guess just the continued depth. You know, I had a chance, and this episode will come out like in 9 or 10 days, to talk to a bunch of the guys from USA Wrestling at the top, and just how deep the cupboard is, that the cadets will move to juniors and the juniors will move to seniors, and the seniors were so good. But it doesn't look like America's falling off anytime soon. And I also think Brooks is a really interesting story. You know, he went from alternate Incredible. To winning it. Doesn't come out of a traditionally super powerhouse area. He's going to go spend a year at the OTC. Which, again, as you talked about, Doc Bennett, the whole Henry Cejudo story, everything behind that, following that path, it reminded me a lot of the conversation you and I had a couple of weeks ago. But just, you said this a long time ago, that you look for storylines, and that seems like a pretty cool and pretty obvious storyline to me.
Yeah, and just the way he won, too. I mean, he was up in his first match against Georgia on the mat right in front of me, and comes out circling, shooting, snapping. I've never seen a guy that, at that level, that is that athletic and that skilled wrestle with that kind of pace. Like, the pace was unbelievable to me. And you could just see it, like, about a minute into the match, like, the look on this Georgian's face was like, I don't like wrestling this guy at all.
Right.
And, he beat him 12-2 in like a minute and 40 seconds and completely broke him in a minute and a half. And like, the only points the Georgian scored were on like a shin whizzer that Brooks hit. The officials just don't see it enough in international wrestling to really, some don't know how to score it. And it was totally Brooks's hold. He hit another one of those later in the tournament, I think against the Iranian, and they scored it right. They scored it just 2 for Brooks in that point. But, man, that guy put on a show. It was the first, the first I'd really seen of I'd seen a little bit of Aaron Brooks in the past, but not this kind of Aaron Brooks. I mean, and we talked to, I talked to him afterward about like where did that pace come from? I mean, and he told me how he just started wrestling like that here in the last couple months, where he felt like he needed to open it up. Like, Kevin Jackson talked to him out at the Olympic Training Center at training camp, and just felt like, different people talking to him, and in talking to Kevin, he said that he felt like having Aaron around like Jordan Burroughs and Kyle Snyder really opened that up as well, opened his eyes to how hard that those guys go. And so, we saw a guy take it to another level at that tournament, and closest match was 13-7 in the finals against the Russian. And that one never, never seemed like he was really in any danger in that one.
Right.
And just to see a guy go that hard and, break that many people in 4 minute matches to me was incredible.
It is. And I was up at a high school here, CBC, and Josh Saunders had been out at the Olympic Training Center, and he was talking to me about, one-on-one with Jordan Burroughs, and Savion Severato, he's there too. And, we're old, at least I shouldn't say you're old, I'm old. And you kind of think...
I'm old too.
Okay. So you don't think about jumping levels like really quickly, but those guys are so impressionable and they're so eager to learn, and they can process things and implement them right away. And, they were working on short offense the other night, and right away they're like, well, hey, Jordan Burroughs showed me this. Just a guy like Burroughs and Snyder watching those guys, and a guy like Kevin Jackson being in your ear, it makes sense that an Aaron Brooks could get that much better, that much faster. And it goes back to the structure of USA Wrestling and giving these guys these opportunities to be around these world, the young world-class guys, to be around the older world-class guys to jump levels.
Yeah, for sure. And, one of the questions I asked Aaron Brooks afterward, I said, could you have won this tournament 2 months ago? And he said, absolutely not.
It's a great question, Andy. So that's why you're the best in the business. That's a great question. Yeah.
Just the storyline in itself. I mean, he loses to Travis Whitlake in the best of three series, and Whitlake, a bronze medalist a year ago with Cadet World Championships. And then Whitlake, I think it occurred down at the junior duels. You were down there in Oklahoma City where he got nicked up in a match, and I think an ankle injury, and it just never got back to 100%. And so they pulled the plug on that. But, Brooks talked about how after losing to Whitlake in Akron, he said it was, one of the worst, he's about as bad as he's ever wrestled. And he went back and kind of did a deep evaluation of what he needed to do to, get himself to the level he wants to reach. And, I think that's why, when Kevin Jackson called in July and said, hey, you're going with us to Athens, that Aaron Brooks is ready to go. And Kevin was really impressed by that. Just kind of his reaction to it. Like, all right, I'm ready. Let's go. And also just, showing up to that training camp, being in shape and ready to rock too, I think, speaks volumes about Aaron's maturity too. So,
you're exactly right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I came away like super impressed with not just what I saw from him on the mat, but also like personality wise, seems to have a really likable personality, articulate kid. And, Kevin Jackson spoke to that as well. I think there are a lot of bright days ahead for Aaron Brooks on the wrestling mat. And same could be said for those other champs, Will Lawan.
Yeah.
Hadn't gotten a chance to watch a ton of his matches before either, but just a grinder and physical and super stingy. And he told me afterwards he's down to gonna take visits to Michigan and Stanford and North Carolina. I think whoever gets him is gonna be pretty pleased with what they're getting there as well. And Kurt McHenry, incredibly slick, super fast, guy that can score a lot of different ways, and to become the third American to win two cadet world titles, tremendous testament to his ability. So we're starting to see those pile up now. I mean, heck, what was it? A couple years ago, we'd never had a two-timer.
Yeah.
And then Yanni Diakmihalis goes and wins two, and Gable Steveson wins two, and now McHenry, and then Kirk Fleet, he continues that trend for Minnesota. Now, Minnesota has had the cadet 100-kilogram world champion 3 years in a row now, which pretty cool to see. That one state has been able to do that. But, you know, Minnesota's known for their heavyweights. And you know, what's going to be interesting to me is, can Daniel stay down to 197 pounds? Can you back up Kirk Vliet and Stevenson in the lineup for the Gophers? Or is he going to outgrow that? And then they're going to have to do some juggling somehow to figure out what's the best way to utilize having those two together. But
you got red shirts, you got gray shirts, you got Olympic red shirts. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You've got some creativity there, but you're right. You know, it is going to be a little difficult for sure.
Any other takeaways from men's freestyle, David?
I was talking to Lee Pritz. I'm sure you saw him out there, and I know he was one of the coaches out there. And, you know, he was kind of messaging with me and just, you know, first of all, big shout out to him for being one of the coaches. And then, you know, it really felt like there's less depth. Like it was USA and Russia, and then everybody else was sort of a distant third. And, but he just said how impressive these kids are and, you know, what a pleasure it was to work with those guys. And, you know, listen to it from a coach's eye, I think is cool. So, the future's bright, you know, like what Terry Brand said, it's not going to get any easier. So that's super cool.
You know, and I think better days are ahead for the Greco program too. I mean, we talked about Kamal Bey and what he did in Finland, and then, you know, Colton Schultz winning the, you know, the Greco gold here. You know, it's probably not happening at the pace that everyone would like in the United States, but, you know, the seeds are there and it's starting to sprout a little bit that some good things are happening within the Greco program. But, you know, they need some more guys like that, I think, that are fully committed, like Kamal Bey. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but
I talked to some people, and I'm going to say something that it may sound fairly obvious, but it definitely is worth discussing, I think. You know, I think the argument that folk style hurts freestyle is kind of gone now after what we've just saw, you know, with Zane and Gilman and, you know, half the senior team is, you know, barely out of college. So folk style really doesn't screw you up for freestyle. And in fact, in a lot of ways, it will help you. The longer grind, the, you know, the really hard training, the two-day weigh-ins, all those kind of things. But Greco is a completely different beast. And for people that haven't wrestled Greco, you know, I would wrestle a lot of both. And if you don't wrestle Greco for like a week, the first time you stand up straight instead of bending over, your feet feel a little heavy. Everything feels a little weird. And the reason why, you know, we have a 16-year-old, hypothetically or in reality, that wins a world title. And then by the time he's 22, he's losing to the guy he beat 6 years ago, is because that guy's wrestling Greco over there for 6 years straight and our guy isn't. So I don't know what the answer is, but I just think people have to alter their expectations unless Greco is going to – unless you're going to be able to wrestle a lot of Greco in your college and formative years and not have to unlearn folk style and freestyle habits, the senior level performance, I feel like, will continue to be what it is. And I'm not sure any coach is going to change that. I think you'd have to be the greatest coach of all time to change that. So I don't think what I'm saying is earth shattering, but I do think it's worth at least discussing, you know? So,
yeah. Yep. I totally hear you on that. Matt Lindland has made that point repeatedly over the course of the last 6 weeks, you know, at, you know, in Paris and in Athens. You know, one thing that, you know, as I mentioned, you can see progress being made, but, you know, like they go from 3 wins at the Cadet World Championships a year ago to 11. So they almost quadrupled their win total. But that being said, you know, they want to be winning a lot more medals. They want to be in the team hunt. And I think that's what's going to take. It's going to take some people that fully commit to this. It's not just, you know, from 16 to 22, like the illustration you're making, but some of these kids, and I don't know when the specialization occurs in other countries, but I got to believe that it starts even younger than 16, where, you know, I think it was Mason Phillips was saying this in Athens, that he was going on about how, you know, these other countries, like these guys are wrestling Greco 12 months a year at this age and even younger. And, And these guys are only wrestling at 2 or 3 months out of the year. So,
right. But even if we somehow have these great coaches and athletes that can overcome the lack of specialization at this point, you can't just keep doing that. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, Mike Poeta was on Matt Chat, and he said, you know, he's got a son, and, you know, that he thinks most kids shouldn't start till they're like maybe 10, I think was the year he used. But he goes, the problem is if you wait till 10, you're so far behind the guys that started at 6 and 7 that you really have to talk to kids about, look, you're going to get your butt kicked for a while and don't worry about it. And that's a hard thing to sell to a 10-year-old. You know, 10-year-old yeah. just want to do what's fun and getting, it's not like losing in chess. You know, in chess, you don't get your face smashed into something. So, I mean, it's a multi-level, multi-layered problem. And I think the other thing is this. At the senior level, defense is so good in Greco, it's like soccer in America. People don't want to watch it because it's a lot of 1-0, 1-1, 2-1 matches, and the 2-1s were just, all three of them were passivity points. You know, it's so hard to score at that level. So, I mean, Greco overall has a scoring problem. It's not just how do we make American Greco better. It's
yeah,
yep. It's not fan-friendly right now. Cool, you know, really good Greco is super cool to watch. But, you know, like watching a soccer game for 120 minutes and then it goes to shootouts is kind of what I feel like you're running into at a lot of the Greco. And you right. saw a lot of those guys, like besides Stabler, who I know I saw you had a cool photo with him, but a lot of those guys scored maybe one or two takedowns the whole tournament, and they won the tournament.
Yeah, yep, yep. Certainly, Cadet Greco, there was a lot more action.
Because the defense isn't
Greco.
As good.
Yep, right. exactly. Right. Yep, yeah. The positioning. That. Yep, yep.
That's why guys like Severino and Baird are Doman guys. You know, and getting, I mean, they got thrown some too. You know what I mean? But I think most fans would rather watch 9-8 than 2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, we can switch gears here to college stuff. We got a lot of catching up to do on college stuff, David.
Yes, sir.
Lots of stuff has happened since the last time we've recorded. Nick Suriano to Rutgers, Joey McKenna to Ohio State, Pat Downey to Iowa. Frank Beasley leaves NC State for George Mason. AJ Shop leaves South Dakota State for Purdue. Oklahoma State's going to go to Italy to wrestle North Carolina State. A lot of interesting stuff. Where do you want to begin?
Any of those you want. And then obviously we will talk about Isaac Jordan going to Oklahoma State as well. So okay. Whatever you want to start.
Well, let's talk Suriano. That's the one. Suriano and McKenna are the ones that are going to have the biggest impact on the season going forward, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, that's going to really reshape the team race, right? I mean, we leave St. Louis in March, and everybody's talking about 170 points, and can Penn State get to that mark? You know, with five champs coming back, plus Suriano, what are they going to be able to accomplish? And the conversation, the tone of the conversation then is, you know, the other sidebar to that is Ohio State going to become the best second place team yeah. in NCAA history? I'd heard that talked about.
I think that was a realistic now, thing to think about. I think it still
yeah.
is.
Yeah. And so now is Ohio State the front runner on paper? What, in your opinion, what do you think right now? Who's the team to beat?
Well, I was nerding out here, breaking down numbers. I think it really comes down to if you just look at team scores that are coming back and you don't include bonus, Penn State's still the favorite. And they still have these weight classes where right now they don't have any points that you can rank, 25, 33, 41. And, you know, they're going to have a Corey Keener and a Nick Lee and, you know, it's, maybe a Jared Cortez, you know, those kind of guys there. And it was kind of like last year where, you know, I think we agreed that when we had them ranked sixth or whatever it was in the preseason, everybody who does rankings with any brain in their head goes, they're not going to end up sixth. But you just had a bunch of guys that hadn't won any college matches yet.
Yep.
So, you know, you can't just rank somebody because they're at a school that's been good. I mean, that's not for the guys that have wrestled and done things. Yep. You know, Soriano makes Rutgers obviously a lot better, and they have a really good dual meet team. I think Ohio State, it would be sort of, I mean, in the dual meet, I think they have a really good chance against Penn State. It feels like they'd be favored at the first three weights and at the last two weights. And Penn State would be favored at the five in between, but two of the weights they're favored at, they have wins to Penn State earlier, you know, with Mark Hall having split with Bo Jordan. And Bo Nickel, I think he's won, what, four out of six against Miles Martin, but he has lost to him twice. So it feels like Zane and Nolf and Vincenzo are pretty significant favorites. And it feels like on the Ohio State side that Tomasello, Colin Moore, and Kyle Snyder are significant favorites, and that they'd be favored at 41 with McKenna or Keyshawn, and they'd be favored at 33 with Pletcher. So, tournament-wise, they need Joey McKenna to place. They need Micah Jordan to be top four. They need Pletcher to place top six. You know, but he's down a weight, and he's probably he's a natural 33. He was kind of wrestling 41 to help the team. I mean, they're going to have five guys ranked first or second in the preseason. Tomasello will be one, will be two. Jordan would be two. Bo Jordan would be two. Miles Martin would be two. Colin Moore would be one. Snyder would be one. Micah Jordan's going to be in the top five. Pletcher's going to be, you know, like somewhere around eight or nine. McKenna's going to be around eight or nine. And the two guys they don't have ranked real high are Tishon Campbell, who was round of 16, and Keyshawn Hayes, who was, you know, four-time state champ and a really good recruit. So
yeah, they're gonna have a legit chance at, you know, making the podium at all 10 weights.
It's going to come in a bonus. We've been saying that forever since Penn State kind of took over, right? You know? The 49-57 reminds you of the Taylor Ruth thing where they scored so many bonus, it was like having another finalist.
Yep.
And it doesn't feel like there's anybody at those weights that are going to stop those guys from bonusing at least the first two or, three, maybe four rounds.
Right. Yep. You know, Ohio State's going to have some of that, too. You know, you look at Colin Moore and Kyle Snyder, Tomasello.
They don't pin a lot.
Right.
And these points even make a difference, right? And, you know, it becomes a full point if you only beat a guy by 14. Like, if you slip and, like, lose a goofy takedown, you know, Penn State pins dudes, and they pin a lot of guys.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Yep, one pin on the front side equals, what, six consolation wins?
So six halves or three up front, right.
Yeah.
So. And the Soriano story, we've got an exclusive interview with Coach Bell from Bergen Catholic, which we're recording this on Wednesday, and that's probably going to go up on Track Wrestling on Friday. Is that what we think, Andy?
Yeah, it'll come up later this week.
Yeah. So he talks a little bit about what happened there and has some insights to how the appeal process works and what both sides were saying. And, you know, he's kind of a legendary coach out there at Bergen. So super cool guy to talk to. Really high integrity guy. It was a pleasure to interview him. And you know, I felt like at the end of it, we were friends. So that was really cool.
Well, Pat Downey to Iowa.
That's big.
We talked about it in the spring that, you know, there's always going to be an opportunity for a guy with that kind of ability. And, you know, he's in Iowa City now. He told us, I think it was before I left for, I don't know, all the trips are blending together at this point, but I think it was right after I got back from Finland or maybe right around there that he was going to, he's getting ready to leave for Iowa City. He's been in Iowa City for a couple weeks now. Certainly going to be a big addition for the Hawkeyes. If he graduates from Iowa State at semester, he'll be eligible second semester and probably in the lineup at 184 pounds.
And instant title threat, right? I mean,
yeah. I think that's fair. Anybody that can go toe to toe with Gabe Dean and win, you know, even if it's freestyle, I think, you know, that he's going to be in the mix. You get him in the Iowa room. And, you know, if he can put, you know, several months of sustained training together, good hard training together, stay healthy, I think you got to put him in on the short list of title contenders at 84.
Right. Yeah, and I got confirmation that it looks like the Valencia brothers are going to stay at 65 and 74. So, you know, it doesn't look like Zahid would wrestle Nickel. You know, he'll be in the mix with Mark Hall and Jordan. So 84 is not quite as deep with him being gone. You know, but you got Nickel, you got Miles Martin, Pete Renda, Abinader, Foster, Parker, Zavatsky, those kind of guys. But it feels like, I mean, if I had to rank Downey right now, I think he probably would be ranked fourth. I mean, we won't rank him until January, and that will really deeply skew the team scores, you know, where they will be a lot lower than they will, you know, the day he becomes eligible. But,
yep,
you know, because they're going to get another 12, 13 points added to their team ranking immediately. So it's an interesting thing, right? But he's kind of, I think a free spirit would be a kind word. And, you know, he's going to a place like Iowa. It's either going to work out fabulously or work out disastrously, right? You know, like it doesn't feel like there's a lot of middle ground there.
Right, right. I don't think you're looking at a guy that, you know, both sides kind of walk away from saying, well, that was kind of okay. You know, I think both sides are either going to be really happy or, you know, it's not going to work out. But, you know, early reports that I've heard all has been positive thus far. And, you know, I think, you know, Pat, what is he, 25 and you know, down to his last opportunity here. I mean, this is the last go around for him. And sometimes, you know, the light really comes on and you get to that point where you run out of chances. You haven't accomplished the goals that you want to accomplish. You start to take a deeper look inward at what you haven't done. And you know, it's to me going to be one of the fascinating storylines of this upcoming season. What will Iowa get out of Pat Downey and what will Pat Downey get out of Iowa?
Completely agree. I think, and fascinating, I think is the right word, right? Like how that's going to all play out. And, it's, you know, you're helping me set up a Twitter account. And I guess Downey is probably one of the first guys I should follow just for sheer entertainment purposes from what I heard. So,
yep. Yeah, PD Hawk will give you some. He will give you some entertainment on Twitter for, you know, the upcoming weeks. As long as his Twitter account stays active, and I presume it will. We'll see, but he's certainly a must follow.
It wouldn't shock me if they did kind of maybe cut that off come January, just to keep him out of trouble for his own good. Yeah,
we'll see. Frank Beasley to George Mason. David, your thoughts on that, on the North Carolina State assistant making the jump, becoming a head coach?
He called me. You know, we're friends for a long time. He wrestled in Lincoln, and he actually called me, sent me his new phone number. We talked. Frank works really hard. You know, wasn't a superstar wrestler, but really works his tail off and great recruiter. You know, really flips over a lot of rocks. George Mason is a really good academic school. You know, he was kind of telling me some of the challenges that are there, but super optimistic about things. To know Beasley is to love him. So, you know, I wish him all the best. And I think he left North Carolina State better than he found it. I know Gwiz was 100% Papalizio's recruit to Binghamton and brought him with them. But the number one recruiting class that they had a couple years ago has got Beez's fingerprints, to use your phrase from a couple weeks ago, all over it. So, I mean, I think it's like anything else. You start at the bottom and you kind of just got to start accruing talent over there and coaching them up. And he said he's going through a staff evaluation right now. So I'm sure we'll hear more news out of there probably in the next 30 to 60 days, was kind of the impression I got when I spoke to him.
The other big news on the coaching front, AJ Shop to Purdue. And we talked, you know, throughout the season about the influence that you could see that he was having at South Dakota State on, you know, a guy like Seth Gross, for instance, and some of the other guys, just some of the things that they were doing top position wise. You know, we saw Seth Gross really become a point scoring machine here in the last year or so. Just what he was doing on top with the tilt series that he'd learned from AJ. Pretty good gift for Purdue from that standpoint. A guy that can implement a certain skill set and potentially take Purdue, help Purdue jump levels. What are your thoughts on that move?
It's interesting because Purdue, Kendrick Maple went to Nebraska from Purdue, and Schapp goes to Purdue from SDSU. From a Purdue standpoint, you know, they get a guy that's more or less the same size, but really sort of completely different strengths. You know, Maple's unbelievable on his feet. Not that he wasn't a good mat wrestler or that Schapp wasn't good on his feet, but their strengths are in the opposite areas. You know, 4-point near falls, if you can turn, it's such a difference maker now. So what struck me was the chemistry that AJ Schapp had with Chris Bono and with John Reeder, and how much those guys all really got along with each other. I'm sure he left on the best of terms. But again, I think that's a place where the guy left it better than he found it, you know, and obviously that was a team effort over there, but SDSU's on the rise, had their first All-Americans, first finalists, you know, they're going to have a preseason number one guy, you know, and I do think, you know, Purdue is very quietly has recruited really well. They have a lot of young talent in that room. And those guys start turning like AJ Schapp, they're going to start beating guys that on paper right now they're not supposed to beat. So it should be really interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point about the way Purdue is recruited. And one of the things here in the last, maybe it was last fall, the last couple of years, it seems like they've kind of all of a sudden just come out of nowhere in terms of recruiting. And they're not landing like a ton of top guys, but you're hearing Purdue mentioned. And second place doesn't really get you anywhere in recruiting, but the one place that does get you is the more lines that you have in the water, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the more times that you're second, you're bound to get somebody to buy in at some point to believe in you enough to put their name on the dotted line. And we're seeing that happen a little bit. And I think, you know, if some of the results, become what we think they will, you know, it's going to be a lot easier for them to win those battles rather than finish second in recruiting. So it's going to be something to watch here in the next couple of years to see what transpires at Purdue. You mentioned Isaac Jordan to Oklahoma State. And to me, that's pretty interesting because, you know, you see it happen a lot at Iowa and Oklahoma State and Minnesota. They establish programs where, you know, they've got all these in-house options, right? Seems like there's a lot of hiring from within that transpires. And that was one that kind of surprised me that you think of Isaac Jordan and landing places. Oklahoma State really wouldn't seem like a natural fit. How about,
yeah.
What was your reaction?
Well, real quick, just to kind of close the loop on the Purdue thing, they're recruiting, like you said, not super, you know, high names, but they're getting guys like Max Lyon from Iowa. I mean, they've gone in and gotten some good things. And your point is really well taken about if you're second often enough, you're going to end up being first. And, you know, I recruited a lot, and being second is the most frustrating position. But if you're second on the ones you know you wanted, sometimes you get guys that you didn't even think you were going to get. So, Isaac Jordan, I mean, you had some pretty good relationships at Oklahoma State. I kind of said, you know, they were going to obviously add somebody. I knew they were going to promote Chris and promote and those guys are awesome. I'm really happy for them. But it was very surprising to me that they would kind of go outside the Oklahoma State family to kind of reiterate what you said, because there's, you know, so many Oklahoma State disciples, for lack of a better phrase, like running around the country that, you know, I think Isaac Jordan may help them with recruiting in Ohio. I think that's maybe a side benefit. And, you know, he was a guy whose style was very different from Oklahoma State's. You know, tough on the mat, not quite as offensive as a lot of John Smith teams. You know, and those coaches are kind of now, you know, they all wrestled relatively in the same four or five weights. Like, you know, Esposito was a 49 up to Chris at 74. So, you know, you got a lot of guys there that can, you know, I know John doesn't believe you have to be a big guy to coach big guys or little guy to coach little guys. So, they've got a lot of guys that can sort of, you know, demonstrate high-level stuff on each other. Everything I've heard about Isaac Jordan is he's a real student of the sport. So, I mean, in that sense, he fits right in with Oklahoma State because those guys are absolute, and I mean this as the biggest compliment, absolute nerds when it comes to getting your technique perfect. So I think that part's really cool.
Well, good segue while we're on Oklahoma State is to talk about the dual meet announcement that came out yesterday. And Oklahoma State's going to go to Naples, Italy to wrestle North Carolina State on January 5th. David, I don't know what your thoughts were when you saw that or if you'd heard any rumblings about it, but that was one that kind of floored me a little bit. I mean, you just certainly there's never been a NCAA dual meet held outside North America. This is going to be interesting. I'm intrigued to see where they put it and what the attendance is like and when it's all said and done. Is it something that you know, more teams are going to do in the future? Will we see a dual tournament or quadrangular or something along those lines overseas? I don't know, but I'm certainly intrigued to see what the response is to this.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of like the wrestling on, you know, on Hawkeye, you know, Carver Hawkeye, I'm sorry, in the football stadium in Iowa.
Phoenix Stadium, yep.
Yeah, and the Rutgers outside thing. Like, these guys are innovating and they're trying. And, you know, I remember Art Martori telling me on MatChat that he and John Smith are both in the Italian Hall of Fame. And Pat Popolizio, you know, obviously is Italian. And Frank Popolizio is a guy that with Journeyman and a lot of his stuff has been very innovative. And I would think that those two guys, along with Coach Smith, have their fingers all over this. I think it's cool, right? Like, they're just trying something new. If you're on those teams, how awesome is that? I guess you got to, if you don't have a passport, that's something you probably need to work on fairly quickly. But, you know, and you might actually see a guy in a wrestle if he doesn't get his passport in time. But besides that, I think it's another cool thing to be able to say to kids when you're recruiting, right? You know, like when we go to Italy, you know, kind of like those South Beach tools that you were talking about, you know?
Yep.
Kids trying, you're trying to make something more fun because it is such a grind. So, NC State beat Oklahoma State for the first time a couple years ago. So, you know, that was when that team, when Tommy Gant was a senior and, you know, Mark Thoreau was on the team and all that. So that's, you know, there's some recent history there that's interesting. So, again, you know, and obviously Pat and OB were Oklahoma State guys. So, you know, a lot of storylines there.
Anything else this week, David?
Well, the Dave Bell interview I think I told you about is coming out. I also got to interview in one joint interview Rich Bender, Cody Bickley, and Bill Zadek. So that'll come out, I guess, like in a week and a half, which was really, really fun. Those guys were very generous with their times. You know, Rich might be the best storyteller in the business. You know, they were all really well prepared. And then the other thing for me is Alex Deringer is actually coming here to St. Louis to do a camp for my friend Marcus Hain from Thoroughbred Wrestling Academy. He's doing it at my old high school, Kirkwood High School, on Friday and Saturday, September 15th and 16th. And I think the entry fee is like $80. Alex is actually coming in and staying with me. It's like 5 to 7 o'clock on Friday night and 9 to 4 on Saturday. And if you want more information, you can just go to twamissouri.com or you can call Marcus at 270-997-1622. I've had a chance to play with Alex with some technique and he's really, really good. So the St. Louis people that can pop their head in, it'll definitely be worth it.
I want to give a couple club plugs real quick. U23 championships. Going to be next month up in Rochester, Minnesota. Those are going to be On Track Wrestling. You can watch the live stream On Track Wrestling of those. Also, the World Championships now, all the content from every match from the Senior World Championships in Paris is free now. So you can go to trackwrestling.com and search that event. Plug in the passcode TitanMercury at 924. Titan Mercury at symbol 924 will get you access to all those matches. So be sure to check that stuff out. Lots of good stuff from Paris, not just on the American front, but some tremendous action from matches up and down the lineup. Be sure to check out the heavyweight final in men's freestyle, as well as, Frank Chamizo and the show that he put on in the finals against James Green, just some of some athletic wizardry. Tremendous tournament to watch. And I would encourage you, if you have the time, just dive into that and surf around, check out all the matches on there. So that'll do it for this week's edition, episode number 50 of Weighing In with Andy Hamilton, David Mercatani. Thank you very much for your time, David, as always.
Thank you. 50 episodes, man. It'll have been fun.
And we'll be back next week.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.